From Bradley University, this is Outside the Horseshoe. I'm Tanya Coombs. The Carver Community Center is scheduled to reopen July 27th. It's getting nearly $1.5 million from Peoria's Southtown Tax Increment Finance District toward necessary repairs and renovations for the reopening. The center has been closed for about a year and a half, but whether the community center can reopen and remain sustainable has been a point of community concern recently. Peoria Chapter NAACP President Don Jackson called a meeting a week ago that kicked off a petition drive calling for removal of the current Carver Center board. Jackson is our guest for this Outside the Horseshoe. Efforts to reach members of the Carver Community Center Board were not successful. Don Jackson, welcome to Outside the Horseshoe.
My pleasure to be here.
You have followed what's going on with Carver Center fairly closely for quite some time now.
That's correct.
You, as president of the Peoria chapter of NAACP, called a community meeting where the Carver Center Board were invited to the meeting. No one attended.
That's right. Representing
the board. It seems there is somewhat of a disconnect between what is happening with the Carver Center board and what the community can ascertain about what's taking place there. Would you talk about that a little bit?
I'd be happy to. The disconnect really happened early in 2013. You know that when the center closed back in September, October, November, sometime of 2011, sometime in that time frame, Ken Hinton contacted one individual that he knew on the board and offered his services to try to put together a plan in order to try to find some funding for Carver, primarily program money, but also funding to repair the building. Of course, it was not too long after that that Clyde Gully got the discussion started as First District Councilman about the fact that there were TIF dollars available, and those TIF dollars could be used to renovate Carver as well. So Ken set about putting out a proposal to the board as to what he thought he could do to find funding. And so there was an agreement by the members of the board who were still active. At that time, I think they had about 10 members active, that Ken should go ahead and proceed with that plan of his. And so he put together a team that had helped him do the planning for Valeska Hinton, primarily Sandy Burke, Marianne Randall, and later on Reed Ali and Sharon Reed. They set about searching for grants, and finally came up with a community grant for $2.5 million that involved more organizations in the community than just Carver Center. Carver was going to get a piece of the grant, a $500,000 piece of the grant. It was ready.
For programming.
For programming, that's right. It was ready early in the year and for signature by this holdover board, and they refused to sign it. And so notwithstanding her admonitions that it needed to be signed, and that is Sandy Burke's admonitions that it needed to be signed, they kept her on a string for a number of months until about March of the year. And finally, out of frustration, she said, I can't basically work under these circumstances. This is a volunteer we're talking about, right? And not only had they secured, they being Ken's core team, that money, but they were working on other money that would, help pay salaries and maintenance of the building and all those things that are usual and customary when you're dealing with nonprofits. And so in frustration, she said, I'm through. And after that, Ken followed, and as did Marianne Randall and Sharon Reed and the other volunteers. And so there were some efforts to try to resolve the issues between them, and which were unsuccessful. And that's we got involved in it in May. In fact, the first community meeting was May 9th at Bethel Church. And we gave both sides were there at that meeting. And the board was there, and Ken Hinton's and his core team, or some of his core team, were there. And everybody got a chance to tell their side of the story. And so it seemed to me to be a relatively easy problem to solve. One of the problems that they have is that the board needs to comply with their constitution and bylaws, and that is have a minimum of 15 board members.
You have seen their constitution and bylaws.
I have, mm-hmm. Yes, and it requires a minimum of 15 board members.
Who selects the board members?
Well, that's the unusual part of this thing. It's the other board members that select the board members. But understand, by this time, they were down to 10, and then Billy Halstead, who was on the board, resigned out of frustration. Now they're down to 9. And so 5 people that call themselves the executive committee are making all the decisions and really not sharing those decisions with the other 4 members of the board. Some of those simply didn't go to the so-called board members meetings anymore because out of frustration, nothing was getting done. So
the board is meeting literally right now with a majority of a quorum, which is half plus one.
Which that's exactly right. And they make all the decisions as an executive committee and then ratify them as the board.
Okay, you know? Let's talk about where their meetings happen and when their meetings happen.
Well, and that's one of our concerns, the community concerns, is that their meetings are not public. They think that because they are a so-called private nonprofit, they don't have to open their meetings to the general public. And, yes. You know, let me back up just for a moment.
Well,
one of the things that we talked about when the community went after the $1.5 million
of
TIF money to repair the building was that we wanted more transparency out of the board. We want to know where they're meeting. We want to be able to go to the meetings. We want to hear what they're discussing. And when permissible, we want to address the board, you know.
Is it correct to say that it is now First District Councilwoman Denise Moore and members of Peoria Chapter NAACP? Is that who went after the TIF money?
Oh, no, it was more expansive than that.
Okay.
There was a group that was led by Robin Graham, who is Reed Ali's sister.
Yes.
And other community people, too numerous to name, who met once we discovered that the TIF money was going to be used for the Marriott Hotel and got that decision reversed.
Yeah, that was one of the largest community meetings I have ever seen at City Hall.
It was wonderful. But even after that, there were several community meetings that were held throughout. One was held at Carver Center in the auditorium before the repairs began to talk about how the money could be used, where it was going to be used. You may recall that the Critton Center had applied for money and got some of it as well.
$213,000, I think.
Exactly.
Something
I mean, that. Everybody's request was considered.
Yes.
In the first round of funding. There's going to be another round of funding not too distant future. But when the community went after that money and when they were successful, they demanded that the center be more open and accountable to the community. And we thought that was going to happen, but it hasn't happened. You know, right now the center is not complete. The renovations are not complete. So the board's meeting all over the city of Peoria. In fact, Denise Moore and I met once with them out at Landmark. They've met at Bethel Church. They've met at the Community Action Agency. They meet wherever they can find a place to meet.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the status of things right now. And the real issue is the expansion of the board, transitioning the current board members off the board eventually this year so that a new and fresh board. Recall, this is the same board that was in charge when the center was closed. And so there's a concern in the community that if you couldn't do it then, how can you do it now? You know, you need some fresh blood on the board. You need some people with different thoughts and ideas in order to make this thing work. Therein lies the controversy at this point in time.
When the Peoria Chapter NAACP meeting happened, there were petitions that started circulating that night.
Right.
Calling for, I believe, the removal of the existing board.
Right.
Where does that stand right now?
The petitions are still being circulated. In fact, they are being expanded to Facebook and some other social media to get signatures. And even though the petition itself said removal, you know, our goal is really transition. We're not saying the board has to leave immediately. We're saying that, they serve the community, we wish them well, but they need to transition off and let a new board come in and do the brain work
Let's back up a little bit.
All right.
At that meeting last week, you spoke to the idea that when Ken Hinton and his core team came in, the Carver Center, the Carver Community Center, no longer had 501c3 status with the state and federal government because they didn't have an annual audit and had the annual income coming through their coffers that
right.
would have required an official audit
right.
to sustain their 501c3 status.
Exactly.
You talked about how Ken Hinton and his core team went back and did that paperwork to make that happen.
Yes. That was one of the first things that
they would have had to have done.
That Ken found out when he got into the books. Mm-hmm. He found out that not only I think it was the 2010 and 2011 audits that were not completed. And so that was the first order of business. In order to receive funds, they had to be in good standing with the Attorney General's office.
Yes. So after 2010, when they didn't have an audit and couldn't have filed their annual paperwork with the state and federal government, they would have lost their 501c3 status for the 2011 calendar year, right?
That's exactly right. They couldn't get grants or loans or anything else without having those audits completed.
And that was under the governance of the current board.
That's right.
And that was part of the basis of your major concern that
right.
I heard.
There really was no reason for them not to have completed the audits.
Mm-hmm.
The registered agent of the Carver Center as we speak is Felix Lobdell, who hasn't been on the board for years.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have not taken care of the paperwork necessary to keep a 501c3 in good standing. And Ken's job and his core team was to go in and clean all that up so that they could start going to various organizations and donors and requesting money.
It has seemed to me from the vantage point that news people have had in this whole thing that everyone involved in and around the Carver Center reopening has only the best intentions for the community center. It's how you arrive at the reopening that seems to be the point where the principle is overshadowed by the personalities involved.
Well, there's no question about that. I think everybody has the best interests of Carver Center, and that's one of the reasons why we think it's absolutely imperative that Ken Hinton and his core team come back on board and get the job done. They've got a plan.
And they have said that they will come back. Is that correct?
Oh, yes. They are ready and willing. And the only thing that's separating us from making this happen is an agreement with this board that they will agree to transition off within a certain period of time. And with that agreement, we're back on board. And here's the reason why it's so important. It's the money to sustain the center on a yearly basis. You've got to find funding for salaries. You got to find funding to maintain the building. You got to find funding for janitors. I mean, the very basic stuff in order for the center to reopen. You've got
and
to have people to run the programs inside as well. So, and it's that sustained funding that's important.
Yeah.
That's not happening.
So the center is supposed to have a celebratory reopening July 27th.
Right.
You have had an opportunity to tour the renovations and repairs that have taken place with the TIF money.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about what you've seen.
Well, I'll tell you, the auditorium, for example, substantial change in it since they started the renovation in it. All of the core rooms for programs, the office space, the boardroom, all will be changed. It's really going to be a very, very nice facility. They hadn't done much with the athletic facility. The plans are to improve and renovate the locker rooms, as well as to renovate the basketball floor itself and the bleacher area and that sort of.
That's costly.
That's very costly. And future plans are really to knock out one of the walls and expand the size of it, which is great, great plans. I hope they can do it. But by and large, when the center reopens, it's going to be a very, very nice facility. And the outside needs some work so that it's attractive to go there. But internally, it's going to be a very, very nice facility.
What has your communication been with the executive board since the NAACP meeting last week?
We met with them May 9th, met again with them on about the 11th and the 18th, and basically it's been three or four or five people at various meetings. But we've never had a meeting with the full board, with the nine remaining members on the board. I've never met the guy, Bruce Fraser. Of course, I know Pastor Durham. But we've met from time to time with Johnny Stinson and McFarland Bragg, in addition to the other four members of the board, Weems and Norm Lippert, Ms. Guyton, and even Ms. Guyton's grandmother, who's on the board.
So the nine people on the board includes the executive board of Norman Lippert, Rhonda Guyton,
Malou Cristobal, Weems,
Michael Weems,
and well, I guess that's it. Bruce Fraser is actually listed as the secretary, I believe, but he has not attended any of the meetings that that I've been at.
Okay.
And the other four members to make up the nine would be McFarland, Johnny Stinson, Reverend Guyton. And I guess Fraser would be included in that group of four. And it used to be, as I said, it used to be 10 of them with Billy Halstead, but Billy resigned.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the five plus four.
Don, in your mind, what is the best possible outcome to get Carver Community Center open?
Right. I think people will know that it's going to be a great center once it's open. The best plan is for Ken Hinton and his core team to get back in there as soon as possible and start working on sustainable funding for salaries and that sort of thing. And in the meantime, looking for more grants for the future once the one they have with the CDC runs out. The second thing that needs to happen, and not necessarily in this order, but the board needs to be expanded to a minimum of 15 members. And the community...
Which is what the bylaws call for.
Which is what the bylaws call for. And the community has to have some input into that. I mean, we need to know that people on the board are going to be there to work and to contribute to the sustainability of Carver Center. Third thing that needs to happen, again, not in this necessarily in this order, the bylaws need to be completely rewritten so that there's term limits for boards, for board members. You know, most have, you know, 1 year, 2 year, 3 year rotational system in place, which Carver needs. And people ought to be limited to maybe two terms and then be off the board for a while and then come back on.
If the current board steps aside, what is in place right now is that board members select new board members.
Right.
Who would select the new board members if the current board steps aside?
We are asking that people in the community be involved in that along with United Way, because with selection comes training. One of the things they need at this board is to be trained on what a 501c3 is, how it's supposed to operate, what its purpose might be, and what their role as board members is individually. So we think that there are others in the community who are willing to assist Carver with going through lists, doing interviews in order to get the best possible board of directors for Carver. And so those are the things I see that need to be done in order to get past this logjam and get this center open, hopefully by their projected date, which is late July. I'd love to see it open in late July. My concern is that the funding, not the grants, but the funding won't be there to sustain salaries or even to hire people from the beginning. That's my real concern.
So if people have interest in, who can they contact? Do they contact the board members? Because, frankly, I have found it very difficult. I would have board members here with us on this show talking right now about this whole matter if I had the ability to reach them. Now, this may be part of my human failing. I may have had – there may have been holes in my search techniques, but it's been difficult to get a hold of those folks, and my efforts have been unsuccessful. So if people are interested in contributing their efforts or money or assistance in some way, mm-hmm. who do they contact? What happens?
Well, I would recommend you contact Denise Moore, who is the First District Council person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the center sits right in her smack dab in the middle of in the First Districts. Or they can call me at the NAACP. The only problem with calling me is if I make a recommendation that somebody should be on the board, it's likely to be rejected because of the role I've played trying to get this thing resolved. So there are personalities involved in this now, and I suspect that they would dismiss any recommendations from me. But Denise Moore is going to be important to the city for quite a long time in the future. Second round of funding's coming along in the TIF money. Plus the fact they're going to need something and they're going to need their district councilman to be in their corner. So I suspect that a recommendation from her will not be received with closed ears as it would be if it came from me.
Thank you for taking the time to be here today.
My pleasure. Anytime.
You've been listening to 89.9 WCBU Peoria Public Radio. I'm Tanya Kuntz. This is Outside the Horseshoe.